أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وروح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. So brothers and sisters, we've come to verse number 55 now in Surah Yusuf. And for us, what we're doing is looking at these verses of the Holy Qur'an, the teachings we find in Qur'an and Sunnah, to prepare ourselves for the return of the Imam. When we approach the Qur'an from this point of view, from a practical point of view, I'm looking to see what the message of the Qur'an is for me, so I can serve my Imam. I get much more out of the Qur'an than if I was purely a mental exercise or I'm entertaining myself, I just want to hear this story. So what we're doing is we're trying to look at these verses and say, what is it? How does this verse apply to me? How can it help me serve the cause? And what happens is, when we look at the verses, there's automatically some questions that come to mind. And I mentioned this question yesterday, but we didn't find out what the answer was. The thing was this, that we all know that the prophets were opposed to the taghut of the time. The prophets were opposed to the ruler of the time. And we said the king is a pagan. So now Yusuf alayhi salam, you're telling me that he went and not only accepted a position from this taghut of the time, but he requested for a position. Right, let's look at the verse. Qala. So now the response of Yusuf, the king says that you have this position with us, you are absolutely trustworthy, you are number one after me in my kingdom. Yusuf now when he responds, Qala. Yusuf said, Ij'alni ala khaza'in al-ard, inni hafidhun alim. So please, you give me the opportunity, make me responsible for the treasuries in the country. So this is a request, it's not even being forced on him. Now what makes this even more complicated is that when you look in the fatawa of our ulama, right, grand ayatollahs, the maraj, Ayatollah Sistani, Ayatollah Khamenei, other maraja, one of the occupations that's haram to have is when we accept a position from the taghut. Let me just read you the fatwa, or part of it, okay? They say accepting, la yajuzu. So it's not allowed. لا يجوز مع الاختيار الدخول في الولايات والمناصب والأشغال من قبل الجائر. It's not allowed for us to enter out of our own free will and accept a position, a post from these governments which are illegitimate. Okay. So Yusuf alayhi salam is not that he doesn't have free will and the king's forcing him. Yusuf asks for this. So the first question was, well, wasn't that something that was established? Didn't we go over that before? The idea that the prophets were opposed to the taghut of the time? That's what we want to talk about first. So yes, the answer to that is yes. That the prophets were opposed to the taghut of the time. All of the tawaghit who were there and they were ruling, our prophets would be opposed to them and they were against them. They were all trying to do the work of our imam, which is to establish the government of God, the kingdom of God on the face of the earth, the government of the righteous, the establishment of all of Allah's laws. So let's look at some of the verses in this regard. What's the purpose of all of doing this though? The purpose of the prophets was that they turn us into being those complete and perfect human beings. Al-insanul kamil. They help us to discover the potential that we have to reflect all of God's names and God's traits, and we can do that better than the malaika. Right? There's a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam where they ask, they say, who's better? Are the children of Adam better or the malaika? And the Imam says that it depends. If he says the animals only have lust, and the malaika only have aql, and we have both. So if a human being chooses to use his aql, that overcomes his lust, that person is better than the malaika. The malaika can never reach the spiritual station that a person could if that person applied themselves. However, if it's the opposite, then humans are even worse than the Baha'im. More dangerous than animals. More dangerous than shayateen. Okay? So the prophets came to bring us to that high state of spirituality. And let's just look at one of the verses that reminds us of what the prophets were going to do. So this is in Surah number 3, and it's verse number 164. لَقَدْ مَنَّ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ إِذْ بَعَثَ فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِّنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ. Allah favored, did minnah on the believers when He gave them or sent to them a prophet from among themselves. What does that prophet do? يَتْلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتِهِ. He recites the verses for them, he recites the Quran, makes them aware of those teachings of God. وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةِ وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةِ. He purifies them. He makes them into these wonderful human beings, and he also teaches them the book and the wisdom. So wonderful. So that's the role of the prophets. They were there to do that, to purify us, to make us reflect all these divine names, to become those al-insan al-kamil, reflections of God's majesty and beauty, and have those traits within us. Now is the question. How did the prophets do this? What was the method of the prophets in order to purify people's souls? We know what the mission is. The mission of these prophets is to take all of us and purify us, which is what the Mahdi will do. By the way, those who work on themselves more before he comes get more from the Mahdi. That's also established. But, so the question is, how do they do this? You have all of these prophets. What did they do? Did they set up research institutes? Did they set up monasteries? Did they go away from society? What did they do? Did they set up schools, libraries? How were the prophets going to accomplish this wonderful task? Now, what we do is we're going to look at some of the verses of the Holy Quran now. What happens is that the prophets, the way of them achieving this wonderful purpose was to go over and set up Islamic societies. Why? Because if a prophet would come with the book and the wisdom, which is what we learned, and they had that book and the wisdom, and they mentioned it, and they talked about it, does having a wonderful book on a shelf help us? Let's say we have this Quran. This is the Quran. This is all guidance that mankind needs from the time of Adam until the day of judgment is in this wonderful book. Is this book on the shelf useful for me? Huh? No. It has to be implemented. It has to be carried out. It has to be read. So what happened with these prophets is now let's go to the whole verses of the Holy Quran. لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلَنَا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ. Allah again talking about the philosophy of why He sent these prophets. He says that we sent them with bayyinat, with clear proofs. Bayyinat. What happens is that the miracles or the proofs that the prophet would be sent with in order to establish their veracity as a prophet, these were things which would satisfy the intellectual curiosity of anyone who was involved in searching for the truth. This is from Ayatollah Khoi. He explains this point when it comes to the miracles of the prophet. He says that if you look, the prophets would go and they would produce a miracle in the highest level of science and technology of their time. For instance, in the time of Musa alayhi salam, being a magician, sorcery was at its height. And Musa alayhi salam did something which the sorcerers said, this is beyond the capacity of a human. So instead of a normal person being convinced and being seeing a miracle and saying, well, this must be a miracle, this must be great, this person must be God. No, it wasn't like that. The prophet would present his arguments to those people who were experts in that field, those people would say, what he's just done is beyond the scope of human power. No one can do anything like this. No human. We're the best in the field. We testify, this is Ilahi. So the arguments that they were, the arguments, the proofs, the mu'jiza that the prophets would be presenting would be something that would satisfy the intellectual curiosity of any person, any rational person would be convinced that the prophet is telling the truth and he's here from God. So that's one thing they were sent with. وَأَنزَلْنَا مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْمِيزَانِ And we sent down with them the book. We would send down this book which explained for them the secrets of the universe, the mysteries of what's going to happen after we die, the rules and laws of how to live our lives in this world and then in the next, the blessings and things that were waiting for us in the grave, all of those things would be revealed in this book. So this perfect way of life, but as I said, just having that book, that's not enough for us. There's a great book. If you'd only practice it, it would save your life. That's not enough. What else did Allah send? وَأَنزَلْنَا He says over here, وَأَنزَلْنَا مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْمِيزَانِ So he sent down with them the book and the mizan. The mizan is a scale, a balance. And we know it's not a physical scale that the Prophet, he would have kind of big scale and he'd walk and he'd bring that and when he saw that, you would know. No, that wasn't the scale. We have, when we look in the tafasir, we see that some of them explain that Al-Mizan Al-Imam. Having a ruler, having a leader, having someone who is going to implement these Islamic teachings, this was that scale and that balance. So the prophets, in addition to having those rulings, would also say that we're supposed to implement these teachings. So the greatest gift of all of the prophets was Tawheed. But Tawheed that the Anbiya brought wasn't just saying that Allah is one. He's not two. There's a creator for this universe. No, it was much more than that. The prophets would say that not only is Allah one, but he has rules for this society. And someone from God, Allah's vicegerent, must rule the earth. And this is where the struggle began between them and the Tawhut of the time. If it was just the case that the prophets were saying, there's only one God. We believe in one God. We don't believe in many. The Mushrikeen wouldn't have had a big problem. They also believed in Allah. They believed in Allah and several partners. You only believe in one. That's okay. We can deal. No, but then when you say that, no, Allah's one, he's got laws, and his laws are to be implemented, that's when the battle would begin between the prophets and the Tawhut of the time. So what happened was that every prophet would then be faced with this struggle. Question though, before we go there. You said that the prophets would do this, and they would all try and establish Islamic societies, but what about our prophet? What about Mecca? In Mecca, we didn't see that the Prophet established an Islamic government. That came later. So what happened in Mecca? What happened was the Prophet, like other prophets, in order to accomplish this, he had to train people, so he was forced to spend time working on individuals, convincing them, speaking to them one-on-one, training them, so they would be the people who could bear and who could carry this mission, assume those posts, and then the Prophet would be able to implement them. So that was something the Prophet was forced to do, but the mission was always, like all of the other prophets, to go over and do this. If we go back to that same verse, right, the verse of the Holy Quran, it says, لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلَنَا بِالْبَيِّنَةِ So we sent our prophets with these clear proofs. وَأَنزَلْنَا مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْمِيزَانِ We would send them with the book and the mizan, the scale. Not only the book, but they would also want to implement that. Why to do that? لِيَقُومَ النَّاسِ بِالْقِسْطِ That people basically rise up and live with justice, conduct their lives with justice, live in a just society. In a just society is where all of those rules and laws could be implemented, and it was there through training the people that the prophets would be able to take everybody to that next level. They'd be able to take people, work on them, purify them, and take them to the next level of spirituality. So now, the Tawhut then. What is the role of the Tawhut, those who are opposed to the prophets? What we find from the verses of the Holy Quran and from the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt is that all of the wickedness in the world comes from the rule of the non-divine. When you don't have a prophet, the vicegerent of Allah, when you don't have the imam ruling, that's when all of the facade and corruption and problems and issues come out. Let's look at the verses of the Holy Quran. So this is Surah Baqarah, and it's verse number 205. This is what Allah says. وَإِذَا تَوَلَّى. Tawalla here, one of the meanings of this verse is when they say tawalla, when the person assumes wilaya, the person who's not divine, not from God, when this enemy of God, this non-divine person assumes wilaya, wa idha tawalla sa'a fil ard. This person makes effort in the earth to do what? Liyufsida fiha. In order to do facade and create facade in the earth. When a non-divine person assumes power, what do? They create corruption and facade in the earth. وَيُهْلِكَ الْحَرْثَ وَالنَّاسَلَ. They destroy the crops and also offspring, people's generation. They ruin children. And I don't think we really, I mean, one of them, if we just accept this ta'abbudan, that God said it like that. But other time, if we just look, just sit back for a second and look. Normally, the crimes that are, because even non-Muslims are coming to the same realization. The crimes that are committed by an ordinary thug, they can't be compared to the crimes that are committed by a political leader. Example. One time you have a thug. He doesn't, for instance, he doesn't like to see women wearing hijab. Right? I see women wearing hijab, I go over, I bother them, I harass them, stuff like that. He's a thug, he's a bad guy, he's ignorant. What about when a government makes a policy? You cannot wear the hijab in a government-owned building. For instance, you can't go to school wearing the hijab. Can you compare it to the two? One guy's a thug, he's on the streets, he harassed people. The other one, he made a policy about this. Laws were put in place. Let's say one person is a homosexual. Okay, he's a homosexual, he's in his house, he's doing his thing. There's another time, no. I legalize homosexual marriage. So the corruption and facade that the authority can do, right? There's just reason why the prophets would be upset about this. The facade that they could do was much more than the facade that a normal person could do. So what the prophets would do would be to try and topple the Tawhut and put in these righteous governments. So let's look at the verse of the Holy Quran. This is Surah number 16, and it's verse number 36. وَلَقَدْ بَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُولًا. In every nation, in every ummah, we sent a Rasul. What was the message of the Rasul? أَنِ اعْبُدُوا اللَّهِ. Worship God. وَاجْتَنِبُوا الطَّاغُوتِ. Avoid the Tawhut. So every prophet coming into a nation, into an area, what am I trying to do? Call people to worship God, calling people to Allah, purifying people's soul. But in order for me to do that, in order for me to implement these laws, in order for me to save their souls, in order for me to save humanity, I have to take away the obstacle to that, which is the Tawhut. So I tell the people, don't do that. Which is why then you would see that people were opposed to the prophets. Now, let's look in Surah Shu'ara. Again, we're going to just reinforce this. Surah Shu'ara, and we see that there's a slogan of the prophets. I'm going to mention one of the prophets saying it, and then I'm going to tell you the other prophets who said the same thing. So the prophets, this is from Hazrat Isa, salamu alayhi alayhi. He says, فَتَّقُلْ. So, verse number 50, I believe. Surah Shu'ara. فَتَّقُلْ اللَّهِ have taqwa of Allah, fear God, practice, do what your responsibility is, wa'ati'un, obey me. Obey me. I should be leading you. I should be ruling. Obey God. Have fear of God. Wa'ati'un. Avoid the taghut. We had in the other verse. Avoid the taghut. And his one, obey me. So then now we hear the same thing from, and I don't mention the numbers of the verses. In Shu'ara, we can all look at this ourselves. Surah Nuh, Hazrat Nuh, saying the same thing. Hazrat Hud, saying the same thing. Hazrat Saleh, saying the same thing. Hazrat Shu'ayb, the prophets are all saying the same thing. Whenever we go to an area, ittaqullah wa'ati'un, obey me. The first one, i'budullah wajtanibut taghut. So it's natural to see that these holy individuals who wanted to purify souls, who wanted to rescue people, who wanted to save them, their conflict was the exact same one that Imam al-Mahdi has. They would go into an area trying to call people, but then the obstacle to that is the taghut of the time. So not only that, the prophets made effort and fought against the taghuts too. Again, we'll go to the verses of the Quran. This is surah number 3 and verse number 146. This verse is talking about a lot of the prophets. It says, وَكَأَيَّمْ مِن نَبِيٍّ. So how many a prophet was it? A lot of prophets. This went through for a lot of prophets. He says, وَكَأَيَّمْ مِن نَبِيٍّ قَاتَلَ مَعَهُ رَبِّيُّونَ كَثِيرٌ. That godly people would be fighting alongside this prophet, right? فَمَا وَهَنُوا لِمَا أَصَابَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. They did not become weak for what happened to them in the way of God. Obviously, if you're going, you're facing the taghut of time, leading a tiny band of mu'mineen, trying to establish that Islamic government, a lot of people are becoming shaheed, suffering, misery, sadness, right? He says that none of that would stop the prophets. So how many prophets, and then after that, righteous people, godly individuals, were also over there and doing this. And what happened was the prophets would have varying success. Some of the prophets in their little area, their village, they'd be able to establish this Islamic government. They'd be able to cast aside the taghut, establish Allah's laws. No, some area, in larger areas, some prophets, global governments. But all of the prophets are going over and doing this. Moving in that direction, that is how we will do this process of training people, saving them, purifying them, is to create a righteous environment where they can easily go in and do what they're supposed to do. Of course, some prophets were also martyred in this way. Let's go over again and we'll look at the verses of the Holy Quran. So surah number 3 and verse number 21. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَكْفُرُونَ بِآيَاتِ اللَّهِ. So verily, those who do kufr, who disbelieve in the signs of God, وَيَقْتُلُونَ النَّبِيِّينَ, and kill the prophets. So prophets, these were heroes, champions. They're to liberate mankind. They would go into an area, be calling to the right way. Some of them would be successful. Some of them would establish Islamic governments. Many of them would be fighting in the way of God. And some of them would obviously be martyred. Everybody didn't make it. But it was all, the mission was all the same for all of these prophets. Now, the other thing that makes it challenging, I mentioned this hadith the other day from Imam Ali alayhi salam, is that Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This hadith from the Imam, we learn that the people who were being addressed by the prophets were three groups. The people who would hear the prophets' mission and message and what they were trying to do, there will be three groups with these prophets and their message. There'll be one group of mu'mineen, like we are now, awaiting our imam, trying our best to practice, saying that we're ready to sacrifice. Please, imam, you come back. We'll do whatever it takes. So there was one group of mu'mineen who would do that. There were some people, obviously, who would be opposed to the message of the prophet. They're enemies. They don't like it. They don't want this. There was a third group, and this is the scary part. There was a third group, and these individuals didn't want to go with the kuffar, because that was wrong.
They could tell this is idol worship, this is backwards, this is crazy, why should we do that? We shouldn't do that. But they also didn't want to follow the way of the prophets. If you want to go over and follow the way of the prophets, there's a price that you have to pay. The prophets, these holy individuals, it's not just that they're talking about God and spirituality and the, you know, calling to jihad. You have to go against the tyrant, and that's not easy. That is not easy. Inshallah, we're ready to do that. I remember once I just had an experience where I was walking outside my school. This is back in Iran. In Iran, so it's safe. Not a bad example. Okay. In Iran, in my school, they were bringing a government official in to the school to give a talk to the people. So then you watch this guy come in and the security that's around him. Right? Security and this is Islamic government. Come in, security around him and stuff like that. Just for a second, I thought to myself, let's say this person was the Shah, for instance, the Tawhut. Would it have been, when you're looking at those young men and the bodyguards and they're roaming around and weapons looking, would it have been easy to stand in front of those guys and shout slogans? Right? So you pay a price. You're trying to join these prophets. You know, I just came here, I wanted to save my soul. I want to make salat, learn fast. You know. And then the prophet's like, no, that's just the beginning. I want to take you on this wonderful path. We're going to set the world straight. But you got to all be all the way there. Okay? So now the words of Imam Ali. The part that's a little bit tough. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This is what the Imam says. As-sakitu akhurragi. The person, and this struggle, we said there's three groups. When we hear the message of the prophets, there's three groups. There's one group who joined. Inshallah, we are those people. There's some who are enemies. There's some who said, no, let's find a happy medium. Not with the prophets, not against the prophets. We don't really want the trouble that it takes to be with the prophets. The Imam says, a saketu, the person who's silent, sukut, saket, doesn't have anything to say, akhurradi, is the brother of the person who's pleased. The other people who are pleased with opposing the prophet, you're not standing up, you're not saying anything, you're not physically present with the prophet, ready to sacrifice, you're just silent, you're the brother of the person who's pleased. You're in the same boat. Then he says the other part. وَمَنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ مَعَنَا كَانَ عَلَيْنَا. And whoever's not with us is against us. Whoever is not with us is against us. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. If I'm silent and I'm waiting and I don't want to get involved, then I'm part of the problem. So again, it becomes tough then. Now, one question I should have asked, and we'll think about this. How is this verse and this message from this verse related to the coming of the Imam of our time? Because that's what we're here for. We don't believe that Karbala was something that happened 1400 years ago and we just want to... No, we said that right now there's Tawaghit. Right now, Shemar Yazid. Right now, problems and issues. How is understanding this verse, and in this way, the entirety of Islam, how is that important to the coming of the Imam of our time? This one, I think, is really important. Okay, let's bear with me a little bit here. Sometimes, because now the understanding that the Imam is on his way has been heightened. When you go across the globe, the idea of the coming of the Imam, looking for signs, what are the signs? When is the Imam going to be here? Facade is everywhere, corruption, others are waking up, they're realizing there's a problem, they're realizing the Tawhut is parts of what's causing them, their facade and the corruption in the earth, right? So everybody's feeling this sense of heightened awareness of the coming of the Imam. You know what problem though? Sometimes that focus becomes shifted to something which is of secondary importance. For instance, when I hear about that, then the first thing that comes to my mind, okay, wow, there's 313. Where are the 313? How come they're not here? They're supposed to come, and then when the Imam has the 313, there haven't been 313 until now. What's the deal? Why aren't the 313 here? All these Shias? My attention has shifted to something that's not quite as important. What's very important for me right now?
It's not just the idea of the 313. What has to happen for all of us, brothers and sisters, is that all of us have to want all of Islam. All of us have to be looking for all of Islam. How is this verse related to me? What are you trying to tell me right now? What we're saying is that, is our Islam very different from the other Islams that the prophets brought? We said all of the prophets are going over and trying to do what? Establish all of Allah's laws. That's what the Mahdi is going to do. Right? What we're supposed to be feeling, all of us right now, is that we want all of Islam established. All of the laws of Islam established. If we don't see that the laws of Islam are established, we're unhappy about that. Not that we're only waiting for the 313, but each one of us feels pressure in a system where I don't see that all of the laws of Islam are established. Let me give you another example. What's the ratio of laws in Islam, the ones that are purely about my personal worship, self-building, and the ones that are social laws of Islam? The ratio of those other ones is greater than that of 100 to 1. The ones that are talking about the political laws of Islam, the rules and stuff that apply to society, not just personally me, greater than 100 to 1. So, as someone who's awaiting the imam, I have to be in a situation where internally I say that I'm unhappy that all of Allah's laws haven't been implemented. I don't think that's right. I'm waiting for that. Not just the 313. When I go outside, how do I feel about society? It's not just that I'm, you know, yeah, I would like the imam to come. You know, it would be nice if the imam came. Well, do you feel upset if you see that the laws of God aren't being respected in the streets? Does it bother you? Do you think, or is it just that, no, you know, let him come. I don't know what it entails. No, what it entails is this price that when the prophets come and they want to see those laws implemented and all of those laws, and that I'm uncomfortable with making that happen. Okay, now, okay, so alhamdulillah, we've come over, we need those laws of Islam, all of the prophets did this. After that, the next one, the most important of all of God's laws, what's that? What's the most important of all of God's laws? We want all of God's laws to be established. What's the most important of all of them? Hadith now. Several hadith from Ahlul Bayt. I think I told Jawadi Amali was saying around 25 hadith in the same meaning. What does the hadith say? They start in this way. Buni al-Islam ala khamsa. That Islam was built and based on 5 things. Several hadith, different imams saying this. Buni al-Islam ala khamsa. So Islam was built on 5 things. Ala khamsati ashiya, ala salah, praying, fasting. Wal hajj is also important. Was sawm, fasting is also one of those things. Wal wilaya, that divine rule, being ruled by the authority of God. And then Zurara says, he says, wa ayyu shay'in min dhalika afdal. Out of all of those things you said, which are pillars of Islam, which one of them is the most important? The Imam says, Al-wilayatu afdha. The divine rule, that's the most important one. لِأَنَّهَا مِفْتَاحُ هُنَّ وَالْوَالِي هُوَ الدَّلِيلُ عَلَيْهِنَّ. He says that the wilaya is the key to them. And the guardian, that person who is establishing these laws, this person is the person who's guiding people to do this. So, that's the way of the dua. So now, when we look then, we see easily why it is that Imam Hussein, that mission that he had, when the Imam is moving towards Karbala, and he said why he was doing it. Right? He told the believers, he says, whoever sees man ra sultanan ja'iran, whoever sees a taghut, and then he describes this thing, this person must go over and try and change that person. So, these things were all there, and that prophet was going to do that. Imam Hussein, what he was trying to do was either to get that political power, and it could have happened. We have hadith from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. He says that Allah, let me just read you the hadith. The hadith says this. Oh, we don't have the hadith here. The hadith is from Imam al-Baqir, and he's explaining that Allah had decreed that this affair would happen in the year 70. It was supposed to be the case that Imam Hussein, it could have been the case that Imam al-Hussein could have established the government of Allah on the face of the earth, but then Karbala happened, the people didn't go over and didn't assist the Imam, and the Imam says, then after that God delayed this event until later. But the situation was such that if people had done their responsibility, then the Imam could have done his duty, and he could have established that government. So the Imam was going to do that. Also, the other thing to keep in mind is that this duty, it didn't stop, this is again from the verses of the Holy Quran, it didn't stop with the prophets either. Meaning the ulama were also supposed to do the same thing. Create a society which was divine, establish all of those rules and laws of God, and then after that, people would be able to purify themselves and get ready for God. Let's read the verse of the Holy Quran. So this is surah number 5, and it's verse number 44. Inna anzalna Torah. Allah saying, we sent down a Torah. We revealed the Torah. Fiha hudan wa nur. In the Torah is guidance, hidayah, hudan wa nur, and light. Yahkumu biha an-nabiyyun. The prophets would take this Torah, which had this light and this nur, and they would rule accordingly. Yahkumu biha an-nabiyyun. Alladhina aslamu lilladhina hadu. وَالرَّبَّانِيُّونَ وَالْأَحْبَارُ بِمَا اسْتُحْفِظُوا مِنْ كِتَابِ اللَّهِ وَكَانُوا عَلَيْهِ شُهَدًا. The next part is interesting though. So the prophets were like that. That was their responsibility. They tried to do that. يَحْكُمُ بِهَا النَّبِيُّونَ. The prophets will try and rule by that. In addition to that, he says that the prophets who submitted judged by it for the Jews, and so did the rabbis and the scribes. So the ulama also had the same thing, as they were charged to preserve the book of God. Bimastuhvidu, it means that they had knowledge of the book. Because of their knowledge of the book, wakanu alayhi shuhada. And the other thing that we understand from this is that they, when we say they were shuhada, or they were witnesses of this book, they practiced the book. So even those prophets who came after the Anbiya, they also had the same job of going over and establishing what God did. So now what was Yusuf doing then? Because we've established now that yes, the prophets were all had that mission. Yusuf obviously would have had the same mission. What was Yusuf doing? What we learn from the Ahadith is that Yusuf, by taking his position, this was a stepping stone to him establishing an Islamic government. I didn't bring you the actual hadith here, but I'll explain to you what happens in the hadith. The hadith say that when Yusuf became the governor, became the in charge of the treasuries, he started to redistribute the wealth. He got the people would come in, and now he saved up the money for them, so he was going to redistribute it in a fashion which is fair, and he redistributed the wealth amongst the people. Redistributed the wealth, until finally Yusuf came in control of all of the wealth in the country. People needed food. Yusuf was in control of that, and he gave that to the people. They said what happened next was that he even reached a position that he was in charge of the king. And the king, who was ruling, he said, you know, yeah, well, you saved my country and everything. And then Yusuf explained to him, he said, look, I didn't do any of them. None of this stuff was personal to save the people. I'm not here to be an affliction, a bala for the people. And Yusuf allowed him to stay on and rule with the condition that he ruled with Allah's laws. So Yusuf, what he did was he took this position in order to establish that. Something similar to what we see with the story of Ali ibn Yaqtin. Remember the story of Ali ibn Yaqtin. So we still have that principle, the idea that no, I don't take these positions from the tawarid, except if it's with the permission of the imam of the time. Right? This is also in the fatawa of the ulama. So they say that it's allowed for us. If it's not going to be something which is haram in and of itself, right? And in it, if we do this, we'll be able to help out the other Muslims. and take care of our brothers and deen, at this stage it becomes allowed for us to take on these positions. So what Yusuf did was not that he did anything which was wrong, sajiru billah. Rather, he had the same exact goal of all of the other anbiya, and what he was doing was to take those first steps in order to implement God's laws, in order to save the people. So now, brothers and sisters, we want to go to Karbala briefly. Tonight, inshallah, we'd like to remember one of those shuhada of the Karbala, but someone who sacrificed himself for Islam and never made it to Karbala. So brothers and sisters, we want to travel with the eyes of our hearts now to Kufa. We want to talk about the son or Muslim ibn Aqil, who's married to sister. He's married to he's a relative of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, and now he has been sent as his brother Aqil was the brother of Imam Ali. He is going over, and now he's going to be sent as the representative of his Imam in order to go over and establish the Islamic government in Kufa. Now what happens is this, that we're not the first people to grieve over Muslim ibn Aqil. Actually, we find that our Prophet grieved over him. Once Imam Ali asked him, he said, "Do you love Aqil?" And he said, "Yes, I love him for two reasons." He says, "I love him because Ali Abu Talib loved him." He says, "But I also," he says, "Wa inna waladahu maqtulun fi muhabbati waladik." He says that his child will be killed with the love of your child. Tears started to roll down the Prophet's face. And the Prophet said that, "I only complain to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala about what's going to happen to my itra." Now Muslim was sent now to go over and assess the situation for the Imam of the time. The Imam gives instructions to the people. He says, "Ba'athtu ilaykum akhi wa abna ammi wa thiqati min ahli bayti." I'm sending to you my brother, my trusted one, the son, my cousin, who's from my Ahlul Bayt. And he goes to the place, he goes to Kufa, and the people are coming out in mass numbers. They said 18,000 people made bay'ah to Muslim on the first day. They came to Muslim, they made bay'ah, in one day 18,000 people. So Muslim sees that the situation is like this, and he gives instructions for, meaning he writes to the Imam that yes, the situation is ready. Now Yazid finds out. Yazid decides to crush the rebellion. He sends Ubaydullah. And when Ubaydullah comes, the people start to get tested by the reality of having a tyrant, a taghut in the town, who's actually threatening you and promising to take care of you. So he arrested some of the main supporters, one of the main supporters of the Imam, a man named Hani. Now Muslim realized now was the time for the uprising, and he came out. Out of those 18,000 people, they said only 400 showed up. 4,000 showed up, and they gathered outside the palace. As the day went on and people realized that threat, mothers, fathers, others came back and they started to take people away from the palace. And at that stage they said by the time he made Isha, he had 100 people. By the time he made Maghrib, he had 100 people. After he made Isha, he ended up and he's walking in the streets and he's completely alone. Muslim now, completely alone, walking in the streets of Kufa, and to himself, because he's more concerned about the Imam of his time than about himself, he says, obviously he's thinking to himself, he says, "Well, look, I told the Imam to come, and now the Imam is coming to this town, which is full of these traitors." He's walking and walking till finally he comes to a place where there's an old woman. He asks for a glass of water. The woman gives him the glass of water, and she sees that this man is just staying there. He's sitting on her step. She says, "Go, please leave. Why are you here?" He says, "Look, I'm a stranger here. These people invited me and they abandoned me." She says, "You're Muslim?" He says, "Yes," and she brings him into her house. At this stage, she realizes this man is all alone. She wants to get her chance to serve the Imam of her time. She brings some food to him, and she doesn't want to reveal his stay and the place of stay to anyone. She has a small son, Bilal. Bilal comes and he asks, he says, who's that? He sees his mother going in and out of that room. The mother makes him promise, don't tell anyone. Bilal finds out Muslim is there and the authorities come. Muslim goes and he slept only a little. He spent his night in worship and he refused to eat anything. Towards the Fajr, then she brought water for him and he began to perform the ablution. He said that, look, I slept a little while and I saw Amirul Mu'mineen. He's telling to me that, come quickly to us. After he had finished the prayers, he hears the sounds of the soldiers. And Muslim comes out, rushing out and fights against the enemies. He was able to kill many of them. He killed 41 people until finally they capture him and they brought him to the palace. They took him to the rooftop of the majlis, of the mansion. Muslim was saying, Subhanallah, La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar. He said, Allahumma hukum baynana wa bayna qawmin gharruna wa qadaluna wa kadabuna. Oh Allah, judge between us and these people who invited us, fooled us, and they lied to us and abandoned us. They cut off Muslim's head and they threw his body down into the streets. Muslim, they said, his last words, that he passed his salams to his imam. And now when the caravan hears about this, it's very difficult to hear about this, the death of Muslim. They said that what happened was Imam Hussein takes the daughter of Muslim and he starts behaving with her how you would behave with someone who's yatim. She recognizes that something's happened. And the imam says, no, we're there for you, we're helpful, we're here for you. Unfortunately for the daughter of Imam Hussein, she didn't receive the same treatment. What happened to the daughter of Imam Hussein after they killed the Imam? They said she was over by the body of her father, and then the enemy started to beat her and dragged her away. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad to make us the true soldiers of Imam al-Mahdi and to protect us and help us to serve the cause. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.